Okay, now, can you hear? So this evening, we are here as a continuation of our public hearing for the conditional use application of 2022-06. Just a reminder for everyone that our meeting is being recorded, and that everyone that comes to the podium, if they wouldn't mind, please stating their name and their entity or their address, so that we have the appropriate minutes of tonight's hearing. So at this point, we'll start.
Is your microphone on? Is that on?
It is on. There's the blue light. It's on. I'm not sure. Usually my microphone works pretty well. But.
So I had to turn it down because we were getting major feedback.
Oh, okay.
So you're going to have to talk directly into that.
Okay. So at this point, I'm going to turn over the meeting to our solicitor, Mr. Nelson, and we'll pick back up where we were back in December, the last time that we met. Mr. Nelson? Oh, actually, I'm so sorry. We didn't do our Pledge of Allegiance. I'm so sorry about that. That would be roll call. So everybody can please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
To the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, and Mr. Emmerich, if you would mind taking the roll.
Members of the
here.
Member Carrada.
Here.
Member Whitecock.
Here.
Member Lund.
Here. And Chairman Rizzo will be here shortly.
Okay, we have four to start.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Wonderful. So at the end of the hearing last time, I had stated we were going to try to set additional dates for upcoming hearings past tonight's hearing before we actually got to tonight for a variety of reasons and circumstances. We didn't get to do that. We were able to pick or set four possible dates, and they are by easy. Hold on a second. What we're looking at is Tuesday, February 21st, Wednesday, February 22nd, Tuesday, March 21st, and Wednesday, March 29th. So I know I emailed these out to the attorneys. I don't know if you got them before you were heading up here. It was late this afternoon that I sent them. But I'm just going to go around and talk to each of the attorneys and see which one of these dates work and don't work. Mr. McNair?
Yes, sir. Unfortunately, neither of the February dates work. March 21st is fine, and March 29th is fine as well.
Is there any way to make one of the two February dates work?
It would be difficult.
I could volunteer Pat Armstrong Services to cover you.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, while you think about that, let me, Mr. Strong.
Thank you. Good evening. Yes, all four of those dates work for us, and we would request that all four be scheduled as hearing dates, given how long we've already been going at this. Since September of last year, and we're only on our third witness. We need to get this to an end point, so we request that all four of those dates be scheduled, and we will be available for all four of them.
Thank you. Mr. Chris?
I'm good for all four of them. Thank you.
Wonderful. Okay. Keeping track of this for me 2 seconds. Mr. Getz, I think you sent me an email.
Yes, they all work for me, sir.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Mr. Greenberg.
Mr. Nelson, I just sent you an email. I will make the mark.
All right.
All four.
Thank you. Mr. Winter?
I sent you an email. I'm available for three of the four dates, February the 21st and the two March dates. I'm not available February the 22nd. And Mr. Blumberg, my client, is not available on February the 21st.
Okay. Mr. McNair, can you make the 21st work? Or?
Unfortunately, I have a private client that I'm representing that night in New Borough, so it would be difficult because it's a continued matter.
How about the 22nd?
The 22nd, I'm sitting at the Zoning Hearing Board Solicitor in Bridgeton Township, so I can try to get someone to fill in. Okay. It is, unfortunately, that...
Is did they actually have a hearing?
What's that?
Did they actually have a hearing?
Bridgeton?
Yeah.
Yeah. and it's actually a continued matter. It's something that's been going on for a few months. We've barely gotten into evidence. However, I did start the hearing, so it's going to be a little bit awkward.
Okay, well, let's not put you on the spot. Mr. Strong, we will definitely do the two March dates, March 21st and March 29th. We are going to tentatively do February 22nd, but that all depends on Mr. McNair to make that work. And if he doesn't make that work, we're just going to go straight to the March 21st. So, Mr. Ember. Are you guys posting these dates on the website?
Excuse me. Again, I indicate I'm not here on February the 22nd.
Okay. I recognize that. Okay. Yeah. And some of my board members can't make... I can't get a full board for any of these dates. So we're just going to try to... With this many parties and this many people, you know, we're going to have to do the best we can. And I'm trying to... You know, recognize the applicant's desire to try to move this along, which I think is, you know, understandable. So that's what we're going to try to do. Is we're definitely doing the March 21st, definitely doing March 29th. We're going to try to do February 22nd. Please look at the website to see whether or not the February 22nd date actually occurs or actually doesn't. We'll also send out email notices to everyone. We have that sort of communication. Do all the parties?
Please note my objection if you schedule on February the 22nd.
I understand, sir. Yes.
And note Mr. Blumberg's as well.
Yes.
Just to be clear, Mr. Nelson, is February 21st now off the table?
February 21st is definitely off the table, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions regarding the future dates? Okay, that being said, I do believe we are cross-examination of the traffic engineer, and Mr. McNair, I think you were in the middle of it?
Yeah, I believe that's correct. May I proceed?
Yes, thank you. Unless there's any other administrative issues? Seeing none, yes, you may proceed, Mr. McNair.
All right, thank you, Mr. Nelson. You recall at the last hearing I was asking you some questions regarding the level of service at the different intersections near the site, correct?
Correct.
The expected level of service after development and the queuing numbers are determined based on the number of existing trips and then the number of vehicle trips expected after the site is developed. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So to determine the number of trips generated, you utilize the software program that factors in prior traffic studies for the types of uses that are being proposed with this project. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so I'm going to refer your attention, and I'll have Chuck bring it up on the screen, but I'll refer your attention to page 633 of the traffic impact study. And I'm saying 633, that's 633 of the PDF. So it is the daycare center. Creasy, can you see that exhibit?
Once I find it, my copy.
Oh, sure. Take your time. Okay. So this particular chart lists the daycare center use, correct?
Yes.
And the 565, that's from the ITE, that's the designated code number for a daycare center under the ITE.
The ITE code number, yes.
And then this specifically relates to weekday trips, correct?
Yes.
So if we scroll down on this particular document a little bit, it lists out the average rate, the range of rates, and a standard deviation number. You see those?
Yes.
And it also provides number of studies at 27, correct?
Yes.
All right. Can you scroll down? It has a data plot and equation. Do you have that in front of you?
Yes.
The X's that are listed within that data plot and equation, are those signifying or indicating the prior traffic studies that were utilized to determine the trip rates?
They're signifying the prior sites that were counted to generate the rates, yes.
Okay. And so the X's, as you can see, are in different areas, even though some of them relate to the same square footage or the same size daycare centers, correct?
Yes.
And just to clarify that question, if you look down at the bottom of this table, it appears that a number of daycare centers in the approximate size of 5,000 square feet were looked at, right? If you look up above the 5,000 square feet, there are some X's above that, correct?
Yes.
And it appears that there's varying number of trips associated with daycare centers that are 5,000 square feet, correct?
Yes.
And these X's, they're based on studies from all over the country. Is that accurate?
Typically, yes. I'm not specifically sure for this land use where they're all from, but this, the database for the manual is from studies across the United States, yes.
Okay. Were you the one who inserted the 10,000 square foot parameter that's being utilized in this chart?
I would have entered 9,900 square feet, but the program rounds.
Okay.
To 10.
So that's the number that you provide to the program, the 9,000, whatever it is that the square footage is for the daycare center, correct?
Yes.
And then does the program itself then calculate out the 471 that's listed?
The program calculates that, and we double check all of them by hand as well to make sure it matches.
And that 471, that is based on an average of all these other case studies. Is that accurate?
It's based on an average rate per square foot that's developed from all the other studies.
Okay. So the average rate up there, that 47.62, can you describe for us what that means, what the significance of that is?
The average rate when you're using, in this case, inputting square footage as the independent variable as we just discussed, that means on average for every 1,000 square foot of building size, that it generates 47.62 trips per day.
Okay. And again, the average is based on these other studies that have been performed for the different size daycare centers, correct?
Correct.
And then the range of rates, can you describe for us what that indicates?
That means when you are looking at each individual study and you calculate the average rate for each individual study, it was between 12.12 and 211.06.
All right. And then we have a standard deviation listed of 29.78, correct?
Yep.
So for this particular use and for the weekday trips that are generated, we have a pretty significant standard deviation. You would agree with that, right?
I'm trying to think of the right way to phrase it. The standard deviation of 29.78 is a significant number, but usually we like to see it so it's less than the actual calculated average rate.
Okay. So you would agree with me that when you're coming up with the numbers, though, that then go into determining the level of service and the queuing numbers, you're utilizing the numbers that you're receiving from the calculation being performed in these diagrams, correct?
Yes, which is the nationally accepted standard way to perform a traffic study.
Okay. But it is just taking into account an average. Is that accurate?
It's taking into account the average rate of all the data that's been collected for the particular land use.
And so in the specific instance that we're dealing with, or the project that we're dealing with, this X that would be associated with your particular project and this particular use may not fall along an average line that would be in this chart, correct?
It may fall above or below.
Correct. And that's true with respect to all the different uses that we're talking about, right? It could be above or below the average, right?
Yes.
And with respect to all the different uses, you utilize the same method to determine the number of trips that are being generated. Is that accurate?
There are some uses that there's two different ways you can calculate it. The average rate, and then if Chuck would scroll down to the very bottom of the page, there is a thing that says fitted curve equation. There's none given for this particular use, but there are some other uses that we wind up using a curve equation and not an averager.
Okay. Can you describe what the significance of that is?
It's
the fitted curve.
The statistical way that they look at the data, whether or not they can, the data is such that they can fit the curve through it that better approximates the calculation as opposed to a rate.
Okay. When you're looking at these data plot and equation graphs and the numbers associated therewith, are they accounting for the number of employees associated with the uses?
When they do the counts for the data points, they take note of the size of the building and the total number of trips that go in and out of the site during the day, which includes employees, if there's garbage trucks, deliveries, the parents dropping off kids, it's all the trips that are encompassed together. It's not separated out by type.
Right. But the only thing that you're inputting into the equation is the size of the building, correct?
Yes.
And then the program itself calculates out the number of trips, correct? Based on these prior studies that were done. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
So there's no input factor associated with the number of employees for the use, right?
In this particular calculation, I did not use employees, no.
Okay. And how about the number of children for a daycare center? That also is not being factored in when you're determining the number of trips, correct?
Not specifically in this case, but I would imagine the size of the building can dictate how many kids you can have.
Right. But as you see, some of these studies have vastly more trips, even though the size of the daycare center is the same, right?
Yes.
And it doesn't account for the hours of operation of the daycare center either, correct?
No.
And it also doesn't account for whether or not the daycare center offers busing to and from the daycare center, right?
Like I said, it counts all the trips in and out. So if a bus went in and out, it would count it, and that could also, that could account for some of the trips that have lower trips per square foot.
So in other words, that would be something built in potentially to one of the studies that was done, right? But you're not putting in a parameter associated with that specific condition, right?
No, that's not one of the parameters that's put in.
If I could, I guess I'll phrase this as an objection. The master plan ordinance requirements simply require that we provide a traffic impact study. We've done that. We've gone through the traffic impact study review and approval process with PennDOT, with the township engineer. We have a conditional approval letter of the traffic impact study from PennDOT. So to spend over an hour going behind the ITE trip generation rates and how they're calculated and the factors that go into those, I'm just not sure that has any relevance to what we're doing here with respect to a review of a master plan submission. The master plan ordinances say submit a traffic impact study. That's all it says about a traffic impact study. We did that. It's gone through the review and approval process, and PennDOT has approved it. So to go back now and start talking about a daycare center and how the ITE trip generation rates were determined by ITE, I just don't think that has any relevance to what this board is being asked to consider as our application. So in the interest of time, you know, we've been going for over an hour with Mr. McNair's cross-examination of Mr. Creasy, and I just don't feel like we're getting anywhere. So I will lodge that as an objection.
The objection's noted. It is overruled.
Okay, I'm going to move on to a new area at this point. Anyway, you received some comments from PennDOT concerning the project and some of the traffic-related issues, right?
Yes.
Okay. And I think one of their comments related to the fact that they require there to be 100-foot length of taper lanes or lane, the tapers that are coming off of intersections. Do you recall that comment in the PennDOT review letter?
Just so I'm clear, can you state which letter you're looking at?
Okay. Bear with me for a minute.
No problem. I just want to make sure we're on the same.
Okay.
That would be the conditional approval letter.
Let me take a look at A28. Do you have A28?
Is that the October 19th, 2022, at the top corner? That's, I mean, I've got the same one. Thank you, Chair.
Can you hear?
Okay. The one on the screen is the one I'm looking at. If that's the one you're looking at, we're good.
That's not specifically the one. I'm not actually asking a question that's in the letter itself.
Okay.
I'm asking whether or not all the lanes that have a taper to them have at least 100 foot in length for the taper.
They're asking when the HOP is submitted that that be the case, yes.
Okay. Is that the case with the current plan, or does the plan need to be revised to provide for that?
The version of the plan, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't scaled it to make sure what it is that they're requiring that the taper be that when the plans are submitted.
So the belief is it may need to be revised to have longer taper lengths?
It could. I'm not 100% sure. The plan has changed so many times.
There was a comment regarding the median and whether or not you could provide for a 4-foot median on Fishburne Road to allow for adequate room for signage. Is that something that you recall reviewing, and do you know whether or not that could be accomplished?
The comment was saying that the desired 4-foot median, they would consider a 3-foot median, the 4-foot cannot be installed. And I'm not doing the roadway design for the project, so I'm not exactly sure what that stands.
Okay. There was also a comment regarding a flashing yellow light for the northbound left turn lane at the intersection of Fishburn and relocated Sand Hill Road. Are you actually proposing to have the flashing yellow arrow at that intersection of Fishburn and relocated Sand Hill for the northbound left off of relocated Sand Hill?
I am. It's recommended in the study of the comment. It's just asking me to put it in another location as well.
And is that going to occur?
It, when the traffic signal, it's part of the design, it will be a flashing yellow arrow left turn.
And you are proposing some signal retiming for the different intersections that are involved in this project, correct?
Yeah, that'll be part of the HOP plan submission as well.
Are those retimings taken into account in the tables that you've prepared, though, already, the level of service table and the queuing table?
Yes.
So you know what the retimings will be?
I know in general what they'll be, but when, as part of the HOP, when they look at the whole signal system and things that might get adjusted a little bit, but I, what we put in the report is what's needed to mitigate the impacts if it's determined that it needs to be between PEMDOT and the municipality and the designer, if it's determined to be adjusted a little bit, it gets adjusted.
You are proposing a fairly significant retiming adjustment at Governor Road and Cherry Rock, is that correct?
Yeah, that was proposed to try to mitigate a little bit of the queue issue, and the township has actually made a suggestion of some another potential solution that could be investigated as well as part of the HOP design. So.
And that retiming is going to be approximately an 8-second change in green time for people that are on Cherry Drive?
That's what the study shows, yes.
And that obviously is going to have some impact on queuing times on Route 322 or Governor Road, correct?
Yes.
And there's going to be a timing adjustment at Governor Road and Fishburn Road as well?
Yeah, I think that was only 3 seconds.
I'm sorry, did you say 3 seconds?
Three, I'm sorry.
Thanks. It's, if you could just kind of project your voice this way, I would appreciate it.
I'm trying to do it in the microphone.
Yeah, okay, so, thanks. Yeah, I can't see
you. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Thanks. 3 seconds.
Yes.
Thanks.
So the retiming, specific retimings that will occur, is that something that you're proposing to do at the time of land development and they haven't all been exactly figured out yet? Is that the point I'm hearing?
That's something that gets, once it's spelled out what's in the traffic study, what's needed to mitigate impacts, and then when the project is designed and the HOP is submitted and the new signal design for the new intersection, then they're requiring that we look at the signal timings up and down from 22, that will get submitted and reviewed as part of the PEMDOT HOP process, which the township has a chance to weigh in on as well.
So PEMDOT also noted that they have a project located within the limits of the your project or the applicant's project here. What is PEMDOT planning to do, and do you know when their project will occur?
My understanding of it is that they will be doing, part of what their project is some repaving on Fishburn Road from 322 to the south down to 743, I believe, which is the signalized intersection to the south. And I think they're just asking us to coordinate with the PEMDOT project manager to make sure there's as much coordination as can be possibly done so things aren't done twice. And hopefully maybe our project can happen and they widen up to where we are and stop or something. But they don't want there to be coordination.
Okay. So you would agree that you're going to try to work it out so there's not a conflict between the two projects?
Yeah, the goal would be to not have a conflict and to not duplicate work.
Okay. Did you do any analysis of the yellow change time and the all red clearance intervals at the intersection of Governor Road and Fishburn Road?
Again, that's part of the submission with the signal work for the HOP. But all the, whenever you revise a signal permit plan, they ask you to double check all those to make sure they're up to current standards.
And so sitting here tonight, do you know whether or not you will be proposing a change for the yellow change interval at that intersection?
I do not know. I think the last time that intersection was revised and other times would have been looked at, most likely it was the project when they added the right turn lanes on 322. So I think that was like 2017 or 18. So they should be pretty up to date, but I can't say for sure if it would change.
With respect to driveways and turning movements on Fishburne Road, and I'm talking about private driveways at this point, did you receive some feedback from PennDOT at this point concerning restrictions associated with the driveways along Fishburne Road based on the proposed changes to the roadway?
Yes, as I believe I testified to when on direct, that the all the property owners that have frontage along a four-lane widening on Fishburne Road will have to be involved in the HOP process, and at that time they'll assess all those driveways.
PennDOT also noted that you submitted a crash summary for the intersection of Fishburne and Governor Road, as well as Sand Hill Road, and your crash summary noted 30 incidents. PennDOT suggested that was inconsistent with crash data that was supplied. Do you have a response to that particular comment that they made?
That's an older comment letter. Do you remember that? Yes, the first submission of the crash report, I had incorrectly put the limits of where that number of crashes occurred. In the report, I had put between Governor Road and Sand Hill Road, and but the actual distance was from Governor Road to Cove Avenue, which is 743. It was all the way down to the city block. That's the total number of accidents. I had incorrectly identified the area of accidents. So it's actually over a much larger area.
So have you supplied the updated data?
Yeah, I corrected it in the subsequent submission.
With respect to the travel lanes and the shoulder widths that are proposed for Fishburne Road and Sand Hill Road, are they in accordance with the PennDOT 3R design standards?
That's something that will be presented in the HOP plans and reviewed during that as well.
Just one second, for matters of the record, I just want to note that we now have a five-member board since Mr. Rubio is chair. It is 6:45.
And just one more item related to PennDOT and their comments. PennDOT noted a site distance measurement issue. Specifically, they suggested that site distance measurements should be taken 14.5 feet from the edge of the intersection of the roadway based on applicable Green Book criteria. So if we could go to page 543 of the traffic impact study. Do you see that exhibit?
I do.
I think this particular exhibit relates to Fishburne Road, and I guess it's the driveway coming out of Fishburne. Is
yes.
that correct? So for this, it lists the driver's eye as 10 feet. Is that based on it being a driveway?
It's because it's a driveway.
It is. And so their comment related to just roadway intersections?
It's, yeah, when you have a street or a local roadway, there's different criteria.
And
I did respond. That was a comment from an earlier comment letter that's been responded to and included in the September 22 report.
All right, so for all intersections, you have the driver's eye at 14.5 when it's two roadways that meet each other?
Yes.
All right, if we could now turn to your Q analysis, I think that's table two. Page 36. Do you have that available?
I do.
You agree to use two different types of models to determine whether the plan complies with the required available storage?
Yes, as required by PennDOT.
So there's a Synchro software model, is that right?
Yes.
And then HCM, which stands for Highway Capacity Manual, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. You agree that the saldo for Derry Township provides that the recommended level of service analysis procedures be based on the Highway Capacity Manual. Do you agree with that? And I'm specifically referring your attention to section 185-42H.
I know I have it here somewhere for these.
I'm sorry, 43. Let me correct that. 185-43, subparagraph H.
Yes, I see that, yeah.
Okay. That relates to level of service, correct?
Yes.
So when you prepared table one relating to level of service, did you use the Highway Capacity Manual?
Yes.
Did you use Synchro at all for that table, or was that just the HCM?
Table 1 is all HCM levels of service.
And then for table 2, you have listed out both the Synchro number and the HCM number, and you said that's based on PennDOT standards. Is that right?
Yes.
Looking at the table, you've indicated that for each of the listed intersections and the turning movements, you have adequate storage, correct?
Yes, that adequately addresses, that adequately satisfies the PennDOT criteria.
So does the PennDOT criteria only require you to comply with the Synchro number?
It's typically a judgment of looking at both of them.
All right, so if we could just take an example. If you look at Governor Road and Cherry Drive, which is the first category on the chart, and then drop down to Cherry Drive, the northbound left.
Yes.
You see that row? It lists out available storage of 160, correct?
Yes.
And then as we go over to the PM 2027, the numbers are all above 160, correct?
Yes.
So as it exists today, is there available storage Well, today, you'd have to go back and look at other numbers, correct? You wouldn't, they're not listed on here.
No, we're required to evaluate the design year GMs of the existing.
All right. For the PM 2027 with no build out, it says 194. And isn't that in excess of the 160 available storage that you're required to have?
Yep.
And then 200 when you look at the HCM number, correct?
Correct.
And then moving across that line, most of the numbers, well, all the numbers within the PM 2027 are above that 160, correct?
Yes.
Do you feel that that particular northbound left has adequate storage for the PM 2027?
We're required to mitigate our impact to that queue back to the pre-development queues.
Okay.
Because the adequate means they met the criteria. I'm looking at the synchro over there, it's the criteria.
Okay. And are you allowed to just look at one number and not the other? In other words, can you just take the synchro number and look at that and not have to factor in the HCM number?
In this case, we are satisfying the synchro calculation, and we're having approximately a one vehicle impact with the HCM. So, looking at it from an engineering standpoint, that's typically considered acceptable.
What is your statement based on a one vehicle impact? What is that based on? The fact that it's 25 feet more?
Yes.
That's about one vehicle?
That's typically an average vehicle length.
So what's the criteria allowed to go up above and still have it be considered sufficient? Is it two vehicles, three vehicles?
It's engineering judgment. Our standard is we try to keep it at a vehicle or less.
So the number, the available storage number that's contained in the first column there, those are not maximum limits?
For that particular lane, that is the distance straight for that left turn movement, but there's opportunities to make it longer because there's a center turn lane in Cherry Drive along that section to the south of 22.
Then taking a look at Cherry Drive, northbound right, we're still in the Governor Road and Cherry Drive category. You see the row that says Cherry Drive, northbound right?
Yes.
And it has available storage of 75 feet, correct?
Yes.
And then if you look over again to the PM 2027, looking at the HCM numbers, they're almost double. They're all double or more the length of the available storage, correct?
Yes, they are almost double, and the synchro ones are about the same length as the available storage.
So in that instance, were you able to just pick the synchro number and not address the HCM number?
The HCM number for that is actually less than our bill with improvements, and the synchro number is only 15 feet more. And the HCM number is longer, so I would view that as more critical in that case.
If the HCM number is accurate, though, you're going to have somewhere in the magnitude of 10 more, 8 to 10 more cars, right?
No. 4. It's less than 100 feet. It'd be about 4 cars.
Okay. And would you deem that to be satisfactory?
Well, the no build is 178, and the bill with improvements is 170. So we're making it better than the no-build condition.
If you drop down to the next section, Governor Road and Fishburner Road, Cockersville Road, and just looking at the row associated with Fishburn Road, northbound left, the available storage is listed at 150, correct?
Correct.
What's the number in the parentheses?
That is what will be available after the improvements are constructed. The proposed turn lane.
Okay. and then dropping down to Cockersville Road, southbound left, the available storage is listed at 125.
Yes.
Correct. For the AM 2027, the numbers appear to exceed that available storage. Is that accurate?
They exceed the available storage in the no build condition, and they're less than the build with the max condition.
Using the synchro numbers, right? Well, actually using both.
Both.
And then with respect to the PM 2027, the numbers also exceed the available storage, correct?
In the no build condition, yes. In the build with improvements condition, the synchro number is 125, so it's the same, and the HCM number is 148, which is less than the build with condition.
Okay. So it's satisfactory to you as an expert in this area when, as long as you're reducing the number, even though it exceeds the available storage?
That's the PennDOT criteria, yes.
And just one more to look at. If you flip to the next page and look at Governor Road and Cocoa Avenue.
Yep.
And then go down to the road dealing with Cocoa Avenue, the southbound left. There's available storage listed of 75 feet. You see that?
Yes.
And then you have, if you look at the PM 2027, the no build is 8160. And with the build, it remains the same. Right?
Yes.
But the synchro number at this time is in excess of the 75 feet of available storage, correct?
Yes.
But is it because it's not so much greater that you don't have a concern about that?
It's because the new build and the build are the same as the same 81. There's no requirement for mitigation.
So you don't have to make the situation better with a project. It just has to remain as it is today, even if it doesn't meet the criteria?
It has to remain as it is in the no-build condition for that design here.
Well, if you have an intersection that really has a significant queuing problem currently and you're proposing a project, there's no requirement to make it better?
No.
It just has to remain as is.
That's the requirements.
Turning to a new topic, the study area that you took a look at, you, I guess, made a choice not to look at Elm Avenue and whether or not there was going to be any type of level of service impact or queuing impact to Elm Avenue. Is there a reason that you didn't include Elm Avenue in the studies, or the site, excuse me, the study that you performed?
The study area intersections were determined in the TIS scoping application process with the developer, myself, PennDOT, and the town. They were the intersections that were agreed upon to be included in the study.
Okay. So you would agree with me that Saldo sets forth what's supposed to be included, though, in the traffic impact study with respect to the study area, right? I'll refer your attention to a specific section, section 185-43. It requires a traffic impact study for those areas adjacent to the site and those areas which are reasonably expected to be impacted measurably by the proposed development activity. You would agree that's what the Saldo requires?
That's what it says, and then the next sentence says, the traffic impact study area shall be submitted to and approved by the township prior to the commencement of this traffic study.
So you did submit it. When you submitted it initially, did you have Elm Avenue as an area that was looked at?
No. We looked at the signalized intersections in the area.
Okay. Do you have any concerns about Elm Avenue specifically? And this proposed project?
I'm not sure what we mean by that.
Do you have any concerns that the level of service will get worse on Elm Avenue as a result of this project?
I can't specifically say if it will get worse or it won't without doing actual analysis.
All right, and then turning to the HRG review letters, and I'm looking, or I looked at the most recent one that you received. You did receive some letters from the township's traffic consultant, HRG, right?
Correct.
You agree that HRG noted you would need a waiver from section 185-43 of the SALDO based on the fact that your reports relate to a 5-year horizon as opposed to the SALDO required 10-year horizon analysis?
Yes, I believe we discussed that in my direct testimony as well.
Just for clarity, are we referring to the October 17, 2022 letter?
Yes.
Thank you.
And HRG also noted you're proposing a retiming of the traffic signal at Governor Road and Cherry Drive to reduce the queuing for the left turn lane onto northbound Cherry Drive, right? That's one of the major retiming.
Yeah, that's one we covered earlier, yes.
So by retiming that traffic signal, will you be creating a greater queue length on east and westbound 322?
Yes, and that's why they're offering a separate potential solution, which would be analyzed in the HRP process.
All right, and that potential solution is the restriping of Cherry Drive. Is that correct, to have a center left turn lane?
Yes.
So would that mean there would be two left turn lanes potentially?
No, it would be an extension of the pavement markings and a revision of the pavement markings that are currently in the center turn lane along Cherry Drive.
So is it something that it would just indicate the driver is starting further back about the left turn lane?
Yeah, it would change the pavement markings to show that they can get over into that lane to go to the signal.
With regard to the alley that's located across from relocated Sandhill Road, do you know at this point whether or not split phasing is going to be required for that?
That's something that's being looked at as part of the design, and we'll come out and just share after the HOP plans are submitted when the township and PennDOT get a chance to look at that. It'll be determined at that time.
And just for the board's edification, and mine as well, can you explain split phasing?
Sure. Split phasing at an intersection, in this particular case, it's talking about the intersection of Fishburne, relocated Sand Hill, and the outlets across the way. Typically, when you have an intersection, the two approaches that are opposite each other, their through movements can go at the same time. It's called concurrent movements. And if the intersection is aligned in a way that can't happen without vehicles conflicting with each other in the intersection, we do split phasing, which means you let one side go while the other side remains stopped. Stop the first side and then let the second side go, so that the movements for those are split into two separate phases instead of being one. That's what split phasing is.
So if you had to implement split phasing at that particular location, would the level of service numbers change for that, and therefore your table one have to be resubmitted?
It would. If we have to go to split phasing, that information would have to be updated, yes. But I looked at it preliminarily and didn't appear that there were any problems.
What do you mean by that?
I did the analysis and there were no level service impacts that would require mitigation.
Oh, even with split phasing?
Yes.
Okay.
It just hasn't been formally presented because we don't know for sure if it's going to be needed.
HRG also noted that section 185-22G of the SALDO requires township collector streets to have a minimum center line radius of 300 feet. Do you remember that comment?
Yes.
Does the proposed relocated Sandhill Road meet that requirement?
I am not 100% sure I didn't design it.
Okay. That requirement relates to allowing trucks or larger vehicles to be able to navigate any curves in the road, correct?
Typically, the radius is the function of design speeds. I'm not sure it's so much truck movements. And I don't know if the whole, where the specific that radius is. If it's on the screen right now, the approach of Sand Hill Road coming up to the proposed intersection of Sand Hill and our site driveway, it's that radius, or a different radius, I'm not exactly sure which one it is.
There were also some comments about proposed sight lines with respect to the stop sign that's being proposed on relocated Sand Hill Road. Did you analyze whether or not there's appropriate sight lines for that stop sign?
That intersection is for our project is proposed to be an all-way stop. So the person sitting at the stop box sign would have to see is the stop bar and other approaches, and it appears that that would be the case.
From both directions?
Yes.
Are you proposing any advanced, like, stop warning signs or pavement markings to notify drivers of the upcoming stop signs?
That's something that will be determined during the roadway design and the HOP design. Sometimes when you install a new stop sign like that, maybe put up a temporary sign indicating that there's a new traffic pattern ahead for a certain amount of time to let people get used to it.
With respect to the alley that we discussed previously, are there any proposed improvements to the alley that's adjacent to Fishburne and relocated Sand Hill Road?
What has to be done on the alley side will be determined during the HOP process. I'm not sure if it'll have to be widened at the intersection to allow two-way traffic. I'm not 100% sure what the width is there. That's part of the HOP design.
Those are all the questions I have at this time.
Thank you. Mr. Chris. And while Mr. Chris is setting up, just to remind everyone, we will be ending about 9 o'clock. So as we approach, we're going to find a good spot to end. And also, we'll be taking a break.
To give to each of the witness. Let's start with slide 60. Blow it up, please. I always find it's a lot easier for people to understand what's going on if you can see some pictures. So I decided to go to the picture route. Marry it with some of the documents that I got from PennDOT. In preparation for this, I served a right-to-know request on PennDOT, and it was refreshing to actually get a series of documents without a bunch of bullshit with it. And I actually responded to what I requested.
Please, your language.
All right, I'm sorry.
Hearing, please.
All right. And so what I'm going to do is marry some of those documents I got from PennDOT with some pictures and try and give you an overview of where this stands. I'm representing Mary Beth Backenstos, and that is her building. For those of you who don't know what that building is...
Mr. Chris, this is your chance to ask Mr. Creasy questions.
Right.
You'll have a chance to present your own case later on.
All right. I'm just...
If we can just move on with the questions, sir.
All right. Mr. Creasy, you take a look at the picture here, please. You see the division of the highway, which is divided into four lanes. You have a southbound lane, a northbound left turn lane, straight through lane, and a right lane. And they go to that sign. That's the directional sign from there, to Hershey Park. It's in her parking lot. We have here the current Sandhill Road. This is where the pork chop is going to go. All you really have done here, just so people know, is instead of having Sandhill come out, you're going to have a pork chop come out here, correct? That's where the pork chop is.
My understanding is it's approximately that location, yes.
And from here to the pork chop is 300 feet, correct? We see the rest of the picture? Back it up a little bit. And this is where the...
Mr. Chris, can you please let the witness answer? I think you asked him a question about 300 feet.
Got it. That's 300 feet to there, approximately, correct?
Approximately, yes.
All right. And from there to... You plan to put the relocated Sandhill Road, that's where the alley is coming out, along here, that's the fence for Estella Cruz's property, right there, correct?
The relocated Sandhill Road will come out approximately opposite the existing alley, yes.
Do you know where on this picture it would be if, the, say, if Sandhill Road, the relocated Sandhill Road, went an eighth, a quarter mile, as PennDOT recommends, where it would end up on here? How far down the road it would be?
A quarter of a mile is 1,320.
That's correct. That'd be about right about there, wouldn't it?
This is an aerial photograph, and that's a distorted, distant thing. It would be approximately twice as far as what it is now.
Okay. So, somewhere right around there.
Just for clarification purposes, is that the distance from the intersection with Governor? Is that what being the
yes, we're talking about the distance from the stoplight at Governor and Fishburne.
Thank you.
Okay. I passed out which were pieces of the executive summary, and I just want to go over it so that everybody understands what we're looking at from these people. First of all, let me back up and say, your firm has been involved in this for about 11 and a half years, have they not?
We have looked at this site on and off to various people for some period of time. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure the length of time.
I reviewed documents from PennDOT that said that there was actually a scoping meeting back in October of 2011. Does that sound about right?
I don't know. Was my name on the minutes?
No, I think it was your Terry Gross at that time.
It's possible. Yes, yeah. I'm sure.
But the point I'm making here is that we're still talking about traffic 11 and a half years later. On December 19, 2017, there was a conditional use hearing, and Mr. Strong has referred to it. As we got approval, But at that period of time, in December of 2017, that approval was only for the design of the buildings. It did not include traffic, correct?
I do not know.
There is a recording where that they refused to do a conditional master plan. I'm sorry. They were did a conditional use, but not as a master plan. They were offered to do a master plan. Mr. Crane didn't want to do one. So that that 2017 approval did not involve traffic. Or we wouldn't be here. If it was approved in 2017, we wouldn't be here, right?
I'm not 100% sure what was approved in 2017.
Okay.
Every township's conditional use process is different.
Would you give me slide 13, please? The truck turning exhibit, or truck turning. Let's look. Can you blow that up to about 75%, please? According to your plan, you propose 325 foot of storage, left turn storage, on Fishburne Road. Correct?
Yes.
All right. You currently claim that there's 150, and so you're going to add 175. That's the plan, correct?
Yes, to provide the back-to-back left turn needs.
Ah,
yes.
Just for, again, talk to the picture, that building there is Mary Beth Backus-Joseph's building. Mm-hmm. Correct. Right there.
You've indicated such.
That's the back of her property. That's the barn in the back, correct? That's where you go into the parking area for property, right?
I believe so.
All right. Now, you have said that you are going to provide here going into the new relocated Sand Hill Road, 100-foot southbound turn lane, correct?
That's what the study calls for, yes.
And it says in your proposal, 75-foot bay taper. The PennDOT requires 100-foot right turn bay taper for all right turns, correct?
Yes.
All right, so that's incorrect. You're going to provide 100-foot left turn into the alley with a 75-foot bay taper. And just so the people understand what we talk about when we say bay taper, it's what gets the cars over, makes them over. Now, can I have slide number? Okay, the right one. 16. Can you blow that up to about 75%, please? What it says in your summary, and just so we're all on the same page here, can you move it over? We talked about this, is where I'm going to talk about it. It said that you're proposing 275-foot. Over here, I want to move it over. Can we move it over a little bit? Over here, move this over center. Fight better. There we go. Yeah, better. 275-foot northbound landing turn with a 75-foot bank taper and 123-foot landing taper. So that if you add all that together, 275 plus another 75, 350 plus 3, you're almost at 475 feet here, correct?
Can I ask where this figure is from and what the data is?
This is from the, it's from your 2922 concept plan for Hope Drive extension. That's where I got it from.
Do you know?
Mr. Nelson, this has been marked A11.
I was just going to ask.
Thank you.
Exhibit A11? Thank you.
All right.
If you add those up, it's 475, yes.
All right. Can you move me over just a little bit more? You see the car there? Right there?
You're referring to the upper right-hand corner?
Yes, upper right-hand corner car. That's 1,320 feet from the stoplight. That's where it should have come out if you've gone with the quarter mile that PennDOT recommends for a stoplight.
I'm going to object. I think he's already answered what the distance is, but he doesn't know where exactly that would be on an aerial exhibit. Again, I didn't hear a question on that. It's not a testimony from Mr. Chris. So I
would sustain the objection, Mr. Chris, if you could please form that. We'll put that in the form of a question to the witness.
So we have the taper here. Now, in your summary, it says on page 8 of the summary, now let me go through this summary. I'm not sure we're in the right place. Going in, can we go back to the truck turning exhibit, please? Go back to the truck turning exhibit. That you are proposing to have a right-in driveway, and that you estimate that to have 768 trips into this. Is that correct? That's correct. All right. When you use the term trips, you mean somebody goes in.
Mr. Chris, just for a second, please. If moving forward, just for the sake of the record, if you could please refer to not only your slide numbering, but if they've been marked as exhibits, the exhibit number would definitely be helpful.
I'm not sure I have all those exhibit numbers.
Okay, so if that's the case, I'm going to step in each time. Right now, we're looking at, I believe it's exhibit A12. You said it's the revised truck turning template, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And you say trips, and by trips you mean somebody comes in and somebody goes out, correct?
No.
What do you mean by trips?
A trip is either an entering movement or an exiting movement.
So that's a movement by itself.
It's a one-directional movement.
A one-directional movement, okay. I didn't understand that. On page 4 of your summary,
Mr. Chris, this is taken from the revised traffic study?
Yes. Page 4 of the revised traffic study.
Which I believe, just for the sake of the record, is exhibit 828.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh, no, I'm wrong with that. 829. Sorry about that.
Let me see. I might be able to bring this up. I think I do have this on a slide. Give me number 65, please. And then there's a follow up. I have this. Here it is. This is the executive summary. And we go to page 4 of the executive summary. The right-in, right-driveway is going to bring in 1,646 trips. And I misunderstood. I thought a trip was in and out, but you're saying it's just one way. Is that correct? One way in.
It is one way in, one way out.
Pardon me?
It is. One way in is one trip. One way out is another trip.
So I'm confused. 1,640 trips. The car goes in, car goes out, or?
The car goes in, the car goes out is two trips.
So that's to get that guy out, to get those 1,646 trips out, you have to double that number. Is that correct?
No.
I'm confused.
1,646 trips is 823 round trips.
All right. So that's both ways.
1,646 is one way. 823 would be two ways.
I'm confused. I'm sorry. Can you explain that further?
When you go to this shopping center in the future, when you go in to go to Sheets or wherever, that's one trip.
Okay.
If you go in the right in only, that's one trip. Then when you leave, if you go out the right in, right out on the Fishburne and Hockersville, that's another trip. So that would be one trip at each driveway.
Okay. So to get the number of cars, you've got to take the trips divided by two. No?
I would argue the number of cars is the number of trips, but the number of round trips, you would divide that number by two.
All right, round trips. That's what I'm trying to get. All right. And the bottom driveway at the bottom of the you're saying was going to have 3,072 trips, correct?
The driveway from the site on to unrelocated Sandhill Road. That's correct.
Let's go to back to the summary, please. Next page on the summary. Page 8, should say page 8 at the bottom. All right, good. Just so everybody understands where we are, we have Governor Road at 17,300 vehicles a day, correct?
That's what it says.
An average?
That's what it says on page 8 of figure 829.
Okay. Fishburne Road, 11,300 vehicles a day, correct?
Yes.
So that at the corner of Fishburne and Governor, where Mary Beth Battenstone's building is, she's looking at 28,600 cars there a day on an average?
That, based on the ADTs, that's what it would be, yes.
All right. So we have Fishburne Road. It's a two-lane minor arterial highway. Posted speed limit is 35. Do you know how long Fishburne Road is from the stoplight of Governor and Fishburne to the next stoplight at Giant Food Store down in Fishburne? So,
I do not know the distance off the top of my head.
If I said that was a half a mile, would that sound right to you?
Traffic signal permit plans approximately 3,100 feet. So that's more than half a mile.
That's 3,100 feet from where to where?
According to the traffic signal permit for the intersection of Route 322 and Hockersville Road, Fishburne Road, to the intersection of Fishburne Road and Coke Avenue, 743 is approximately 3,100 feet.
All Give me back the picture.
The other picture.
Number 60. Have you measured how far it is from the line where the traffic is to the dividing line of the blue sign there? Where the road splits. Have you actually yourself ever physically gone out and measured what that distance is?
No.
You claim on the Q analysis set summary that we looked at earlier, and I'm not sure what number that is.
It's from the traffic study?
Yes.
So it's Exhibit 29, okay. 29.
You claim that at, according to that, it says it's supposed to be 150 feet, correct?
I measured distance from using the plan and the air photography from the stop bar back to where Fishburne Road is about to be 30 feet wide, which would be enough width for three vehicles to pass to go into the left turn lane, the center lane, the right turn lane. Because that's not standard turn lane markings there for that approach.
But I'm saying, according to the Q summary, you supposedly have 150 feet to the Q, correct?
It's measured 150 feet, as I just indicated.
What if I told you that's not 150 feet, but it's only 110 feet? I went out and measured it.
I don't know where you measured to and from.
All right. Well, let's look at that.
Again, Mr. Chris can have someone provide this testimony. If he has a question for the witness, he can ask the question. I think the question has already been asked and answered by the witness, though.
Yeah, I would agree, Mr. Chris, that you shouldn't be presenting your own testimony at this point in time. You've asked a question. He's answered that he can't challenge you on what your statement is.
Well,
why don't we, I think this is a good time, why don't we take a break? I am going to sustain the objection on that basis. If you could reformulate the question, that would be good, sir.